Good evening. This is Ruthie. We're here at syndicatednews.net, and we're talking to Patrick Kearns. He's joining us. He's a mathematician that's concerned about how things are changing in America, and he wants to have a forum where he can talk about it. Patrick, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Ruthie. Thank you very much for having me on your show. I greatly appreciate it, and I feel honored to just be in your presence.
Oh, stop it, Patrick. Anyway, Patrick is a mathematician, so he's very, very smart. And we're going to talk about all sorts of things, like current events. What's on your mind, Patrick? Talk to me about current events. What's the latest? What's going on?
Well, the latest is the Trayvon Martin case and what is about to unfold. And I think that a lot of the general public is not really tuned in because the case hasn't started yet, but it's going to start on Monday. And I give much daps and credit to Judge Nelson because she set the stage. She gave him Friday off. So Monday is going to be the kickoff to something that is going to be very pivotal, and I think it's going to change the direction of how we view the judicial system in this country. I think it's going to be very pivotal.
I thought OJ was going to be pivotal,
yeah.
And it was. There was so much anger because that case fell on one side of the road or the other, and the country split right down the middle along racial lines. And I have to tell you that now we're in 2013 and we're in the same place.
And I agree with you. I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I think this case is going to do exactly the same thing. It really is going to split the country along racial lines, not in the sense that you're white and you're for the white people, or you're black or you're for the black people, but in the sense that you have an affinity for. If you're a mother and this is your child, you might not really understand the whole process of, how could somebody kill my child? And see, for mothers, this goes beyond racial lines. This is where women are on one accord. It doesn't matter if you're a white woman, if you're a black woman, if you're a Hispanic woman, if you're a Latino woman, if you're an Asian woman, no mother wants to see her child get gunned down. Now, the flip side to that is, well, we got to deal with the NRA, we got to deal with the gun laws, we got to deal with the fact that, okay, you have the right to bear arms, the Second Amendment. You got to deal with the fact that, okay, we have these laws in certain states where, okay, what do they call it? Stand your ground. So there's going to be a lot of stuff that's going on in this whole mix that once the dust settles, we're going to see where we all stand. And the question is, are we all going to be safe and be protected under the same letter of the law? Or are we going to draw lines and say that, well, if you're this or that or this or that, you're protected or you're not protected? That's where we're going. And it's very important for people today to pay attention to this trial because it means more than a black child and notice I said child, a black child being killed by he's not even white. He's Hispanic. So we really have to understand this, and we have to see how this is going to work out, because once this is over and they adjudicate it and the jury says what they say and the determination is made, guilty or not guilty, we got to figure out which way we're going as a people in this country, because we're all in this together.
Well, this morning, Don West kept trying to change the game, and the judge wasn't having it. She just wasn't having it. And he kept bringing up topics and mentioning themes as though these are things that she should already know. And she said, I don't have that in writing before me. Oh, no, I'm sure I gave it to you. I'm sure you read it on the 23rd. I'm sure. And she said, no, I don't. And she's very, very detail-oriented. And she flipped her notes, and she went right to the date. I think it was the 23rd, and she didn't find it, and she called them on it. And being accustomed to just talking a little louder and being a little more forceful, he's accustomed to getting his way. And she wasn't having it. And that ended that, and everybody was sent home at 10:30 in the morning. So we decided today to do something different. Since we had this time on our hands, we actually went to seek out business owners in the community to find out what exactly they felt about this case, what their thoughts were, and it was quite amazing. It was very touching that the community, business owners, are so seriously vetted and involved in this case, and they want to know what's happening. They want to know how it is that we wound up with an all-white jury. I mean, that's amazing. This is 2013, and here we are in a predominantly black community, Sanford, Florida. And you mean to tell me that in all my community, they couldn't find at least half of the jury, you know, three people be black? But then you start looking at the demographics of the community, and you find, when you look at the census, that it really is a lot of women and a lot of whites, homeowners. And it was impressive that one was so young. I think she's 22. And the others are people who I think are very responsible, formidable jurors. And it was interesting to watch De La Rianda representing the state of Florida, and to watch Don West and Mark O'Mara argue their position for George Zimmerman. But two very important things happened this week. And, well, also, by the way, yesterday when Judge Nelson actually read the charge, where you hear, for the first time, you heard the judge verbally speak the words that identify what you're being charged with. And I watched George as he heard, as her words fell on his ears, as he was, when his brain captured the information. And it was the first time I had ever seen him show fear. It was the first time ever that he actually looked frightened to me. He had never looked frightened before.
Let me ask you a question, Ruthie.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead.
Explain to us the confrontation that happened between Don West, who's the prosecuting attorney. He's part of the prosecution team for George Zimmerman. Explain to us what happened between him and the exchange that he had with Judge Nelson.
This morning, she wanted to have a FRI hearing where they're going to determine what can be used, what can be said, whether certain expressions are going to be accepted, whether certain exams are going to be had. And as it happens, out of the blue, I think about a week ago, when not many people noticed, I guess. Are you near a fan or something?
No, I'm not.
What is that sound? Oh, it stopped. And I remember that there were certain expressions that Mark O'Mara doesn't want in the trial, such as profiles. It's something like a wave. Do you have rain going on there?
Man, I'm just sitting here. I can hear it. I can hear what you're talking about, but it's
okay,
not on my phone.
I know, but we have
Now it's gone. Now it's gone.
Yeah, it is. Sometimes when there's lightning and thunder between the two people talking, you know, because I'm in Florida and you're in Norcross, Georgia. So between us, there could be all sorts of rainstorms and thunder, lightning and thunderclaps and all that. In any case, there were certain words that O'Mara wanted removed. And I remember when he requested that those words be removed, it went through really smoothly, and De La Rionda didn't react. He didn't argue it. It was, you want them taken out, fine. And it was done very calmly. I was very surprised that he let that slip. I thought he had let that slip. And today it came up again. They don't want the word profile to be used. They don't want the words wannabe cup to be used. And Judge Nelson said, yes, they will be used, because that's the basis of De La Rionda's case. There have been three previous physical altercations between George Zimmerman and police officers. Whether or not, you know, they were in wearing their uniforms or not is really inconsequential to me, because if I don't know someone's a police officer, but now I found it out, I'm not going to shove that person, because there's a certain respect that I have for law enforcement. I also am not stupid. I don't want to get locked up. And he seems to have had this problem three times in the past. And, well, you can't introduce previous acts into this case. But, it's been said and the whole world knows it, you can't unring that bell and all of a sudden our minds all go blank. Now, we're not going to go to the homes of the jurors and tell them about this. They might have forgotten. Maybe they never read it. We don't know. But the point is, they're not stupid. They heard about it. This case has been out in the open since, a year? February 26th? We're now, that's a year and 6 months? We're in June of the following year.
Right.
So they
About a year and four months.
Everybody around the world has heard about this case. This is not a secret case. So to try to make it secret now is ridiculous. It really is. So basically she said these expressions will be used. Not all of them. Like followed Trayvon after the dispatcher had told him not to.
Right.
Okay, they won't use that, but there are 20 other ways you can say that. You don't have to use that verbiage. You can use many other different. There are so many different ways to say that. And Don West is accustomed to getting his way. He's a forceful attorney. He's handled some really high-profile cases. And he's accustomed. He takes on hard cases and hard people. And he defends them, and he does a good job.
Now, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this for the listeners. It sounds like you're very familiar with this Don West. And this is one of the things that people are going to have to get used to, is hearing these names. and, you know, not necessarily researching their background, but just knowing who they are. So this Don West that you're talking about is a very prominent figure, correct, in the legal field?
Yes, he is. He's prominent because he has taken on some very serious cases, you know, very serious cases that have gotten tremendous notoriety. Not little local cases, but cases that were very difficult to, how would I say, to defend. He's defended mobsters, for instance.
Interesting.
And yeah, and he's defended very high profile cases, and he's won in many cases. He's very smart. One of the most interesting things we were talking, just light conversation, just chatting, standing out on the lawn in front of the courthouse one afternoon when we were waiting for Benjamin Crump to come out and give a conference. After the day is done, they usually come in and give a press conference out on the lawn. And we were standing around waiting for him, and I remember that Don West was there. But I'm not a friend of his. He's not a friend of mine. I know him only through this case, and we are not friends or anything. I just happen to say good morning, good night, and that type of thing. He, you know, we're not buddies. We don't go to have lunch together. None of that. But I see that he's defending this case, and I remember that he had a friend of his with him that day, and I said, oh my gosh, I think I know you. Are you an actress? The woman, I was sure she was an actress. I didn't know for definitely, but I said that. I said, my gosh, you're so beautiful. You look like an actress. Where have I seen you? What movies have you been in? And I was snapping away, and I was taking photos, and I have them, by the way, and she's a really attractive lady. And but that just happened very mildly. It was very innocent. But he never brought her to court again. Never again. I never saw her. Yeah, I never saw her again. Yeah. Very, very unusual. But
now,
let me ask you this,
Ruthie.
Yeah.
With your experience in journalism and being on the front line and being in the forefront of everything that's either late-breaking or newsworthy, to the average listener, such as myself, to the average listener, when you look at this case, do you feel that the racial element is somehow going to supersede or take over the actual preponderance of evidence? Or do you feel like the lawyers are sophisticated enough to where even if one of them brings it up, the other one can diffuse it and just bring it right back into whether, you know, a law was broken or not?
In this case, is fallen into racial lines. There's no question. I spent the day visiting. I'm not a hypocrite, and I'm not going to say, oh, no, because I write, I know this community, and I know that community, and I know this group of people, and I know that. That's not true. No one that writes about anything can possibly know all the cultures, all the people, all the communities, it's impossible. And I wasn't going to feign that because I have read or had the experience with or had grown up with or near, you know, my house was near someone's house, that all of a sudden now I know black culture, I know everything about it. That's not true. I do not. And I didn't want to have an assistant that would know about hip-hop and rap music, which is usually what I get because they usually are interested in music and they come to do the internship because they want to learn about music and they want to learn how to produce and production and all that other good stuff. And I wanted someone who had raised a family in black culture, a black family who understood the culture, who understood the black church, who understood the language, who understood the food, the culture, the sensitivities. And that's why I chose Michelle Bostic. That's the reason. And it was very, very touching that she guided me many times and kept me from making all sorts of mistakes. And it was very touching, and it was very helpful. Today we went into the community, and if I had gone by myself, I never would have been listened to. But because she was accompanying me, I knew that they would take me seriously, and they did. And what we did was we visited Sanford, Florida. We went to an eatery, and it was so touching. In fact, the woman, as she's telling the tale, she's telling us the story, her hair on her arms is standing up. You know when a person is so moved, and sure enough, we wind up downtown, and I said, oh, I've been here before. That's a police station. And she said, there are no black businesses right here, but we went past a mile or two over, and sure enough, we found them. And it was like Church Row. Every other block had a different church. And we went, And we went to a local eatery, and both the manager and the woman who was running the counter, they, by chance, I said, we came in to see if we could talk to people who work and live in Sanford. If you could give us your opinion on the trial and what you think of what's going on the trial. And the genuine answer that she gave me was, I think that, you know, after all these years, a white jury, it's unfair. I hope they reach the right conclusion. And she felt that Zimmerman had to do some time. It was only fair. She said, I just can't believe that all of this would go on. And if he walks away, there's going to be such disappointment, and it will be nationwide. And it was very, very interesting. Give me a moment. We have another guest. Hello, phone number 2486, ending in 2486. Would you like your mic open to join us, or would you just like to listen? No, I guess they just want to listen. Okay? And
people are scared to talk about this. Have
you
noticed?
Yeah, I see that.
They're scared. They are scared to talk about it. And you know why they're scared to talk about it?
Let me tell you the story. Let me tell you the story, because it was very touching.
Okay.
The woman said to me a couple of days ago, Trayvon's mom came into our restaurant, and she came in with Trayvon's uncle, and she said, and he held up his, you know, they wear a sign that says that they're members of the family, it says family, and then the side that they're on, and he said, Trayvon, is that lightning I hear? It sounds like lightning and thunder.
No, I was just opening my patio door, that's all.
Okay. And he said, Trayvon was named after me. And he said it in such a tender way that the manager made it a point. I mean, talk about compassion. She made it a point to immediately instruct all the staff members. And what she did was ask the entire staff to be cognizant that the family was there, to be respectful, and not to go near them. In other words, all she did was see that they were part of the restaurant body, that they were now sitting there as guests, and she made it her business to protect that family. And I was very touched. It was very moving. And then even patrons started coming in. She started veering them away from them to give them absolute privacy, and I was thinking, my gosh, what compassion. And what touched me was that as you're looking at, you know, talking to this manager and to the restaurant worker. By the way, the woman that works in the restaurant, she's been in that community for 38 years. So when she talks, people listen. She knows what she's talking about. She's not
Wow.
Yeah, she didn't just arrive there. She's been there all her life. So when she spoke with authority. And it was touching. And then I wanted to take a picture of them because I said, you know, your story is so beautiful that you took the time to take a drop of compassion and make Trayvon's mother's lunch something pleasant and lovely and private. That was very generous of you, of heart, generous of heart and very compassionate. And it was just lovely to hear it and to see it. And when they went to take, I put the camera up to take the picture, and it happened that when I went to take the picture, the both of them stood next to each other like good friends, you know what I mean? And it's sweet, and it's heart-rending because one of them is a black woman and the other one is a white woman. And that was very, very touching. By the way, Patrick, I shut your microphone off. That noise is coming from you. Because when I shut off your microphone, there's a tremendous amount of noise coming from you. It could be anything. You could be standing next to a large refrigerator or a big computer or something, you know, metal
I'm on my patio. Let me get off. And
yeah, you're on your patio.
Hold on.
And the frame, I'm sure, is metal, and that's carrying. Anyway, as I was saying, these women had such compassion. And then I wanted to go ahead and learn more about the community. And Michelle took me to a soul food restaurant. And I'm going to be talking about that at length. We're writing a piece about that because a soul food restaurant, it's not an everyday thing. A soul food restaurant. And this soul food restaurant is the kind of black restaurant with tablecloths and beautiful windows and just lovely. There's a high-tech TV. It's up high on the ceiling, kind of, and it's constantly circulating photographs of the food, of the menu. It was very high tech, and I got the owner and his brother that was running the video. There's a video running through it, and the designer that put that video together, the producer, he was there as well. And again, I got to speak to patrons that were sitting there relaxed and having their meal, and it was just touching that they knew so much about the case, and there's no question that this case is right down the middle on, it's a black and white issue. When I talk to my white friends, they don't see any of these aspects that my black friends see. They're completely divided down the center. And it was very, very heartbreaking. And by the way, I'm going to keep mentioning this cafe, because you never know when you might want to come to Rutledge and Cocoa, Florida. And in Cocoa, Florida now, and there's going to be an article about this restaurant and the people that we met there today, as well as their voices, because I was able to record my questions and their answers. And that too was very, very touching. It's called From Scratch Cafe. From Scratch Cafe. And its location is 1641 North US 1 in Cocoa, Florida, 32922. So you can Google it. And the restaurant number is 321-806-3912. And I'm not talking food that comes out of a can or food that is just thrown together. I'm talking about
real
Southern cooking. Right. For instance, the person that I wanted to talk to was in the Marines, and now he's working in an engineering company, and he looks like a bodybuilder. He's really a massive, very cut fellow, and I told him I want to interview for a minute, and he was having oxtail, and I think collard greens. This, we're talking off, and cornbread. We're talking, and macaroni and cheese. We're talking authentic Southern cooking. Yeah, it was.
That's the lick right there. Oxtails and collard greens and macaroni and cheese.
And I photographed him in front. I said, don't you touch that food yet. Let me get a good picture of you with your food, with your meal in front of you. And it's the most beautiful picture. In fact, that's going to be the feature. It's going to do the. It's going to be the lead. And, again, it's From Scratch Cafe at 1641 North US 1, Cocoa, Florida, 32922, for those of you that want to Google it. And, again, their phone number is 321-806-3912, and it's owned by David Williams. And the manager that's running that cash register and bringing that food out from the chef and bringing it out and serving it and plating it, and, you know, no, he's not plating it. He's already getting it plated, but he's bringing it to the table. That was his brother, Terrence L. Williams. And I'm sorry, but I am nepotistic. I absolutely agree that if there are relatives in a family...
Oh, you believe in nepotism? Do you really?
I'm sorry.
You believe in nepotism?
Yes, I do. If there's talent in the family, I put them all to work. Yes, I do. I've done it many times. Absolutely.
I appreciate everything that you just said. But, Ruthie, for our callers that are online, let's bring it back full circle. Let's talk about the fact that we have an all-white jury and they're all females. And I would like to hear from the callers. I would like to hear from the callers that are online and how they feel that this will affect the case.
I opened all the
Does it make a difference or no?
Eric, what do you say?
Well, I'll say it's going to be a tremendous impact as far as the outcome of the trial, because I would say that more than likely those specific jurors are going to have somewhat of the same maybe type of views that the defendants has, and, you know, and believing in gun control. I mean, believing in carrying a gun and protecting your home and the neighborhood and things of that nature. So I think it's going to be a tremendous impact.
Let me ask you this, Eric. Being that you live in Georgia, and Georgia has the stand your ground law the same way that Florida has it, are you familiar with the stand your ground law and what the statutes are and how it works? Yes or no?
Well, I know a little bit about the law. I know that you're able to protect yourself as far as if you're being harmed, you know, if your life is being threatened, you're able to protect yourself, you know.
Okay.
I don't know the full scope of the law.
Now, how do you feel about the fact that let me interject this right here, and then I'll give you the floor, Ruthie. being that George Zimmerman was not under a threat, he actually precipitated the event. He was the aggressor. How do you feel that that's going to play a role in the trial? Is the prosecution going to be able to play on that and be able to springboard it into the fact that, okay, this guy was completely wrong because he was the antithesis of the stand your ground law? He didn't stand his ground. He just took his ground and expanded it versus... Go ahead.
I feel that's going to fall in the favor of the prosecutor because, like you said, he went out and chased Trayvon. You know, he wasn't threatened by any means. So you actually he actually brought the event on himself as far as those circumstances. You know,
do you feel that kills the case for the defense? Does that just kill it right there? Because it's the fact of the matter. It's a fact. He pursued the perpetrator.
Right, no, I don't think that's going to kill the case because it's not a crime to pursue anyone, you know.
Oh, see, Ruthie, here we go. Now,
okay,
why wouldn't that kill the case?
Well, so that we can be fair, let's give them the backgrounds on the six jurors, because once we have that in place, that will give us something to work with. The first one, they identified her as B-51. She's retired, not married, and she doesn't have any kids. She's lived in Seminole County for 9 years, and she's worked in real estate, and she ran a call-in center where she had experience resolving all sorts of conflicts. And when they asked her if Zimmerman did something wrong by following Martin instead of waiting for the police, she said, yeah, I guess he did do something wrong. That was juror B-51. Then there's B-29. Now, she recently moved to Central Florida from Chicago, and she likes watching The Real Housewives on Bravo TV. She works as a nurse in an Alzheimer's section of a nursing home. And she said she hasn't really paid that much attention to the shooting. She said that she has been arrested herself, but her case was disposed of, and it wasn't clear why she was arrested or exactly what had happened in her case. Though she did say she was treated fairly. She's married and has several children. And one of the prosecutors described her as either black or Hispanic while he was talking about her. He's not sure. And what I think it is being a Latin woman myself, in our culture, in our Latin culture, we have an array. We have the rainbow. So we have, for instance, people from the Dominican Republic, from Cuba, from Bluefields in Venezuela, in parts of Nicaragua, where there are enclaves of black people. And they are Spanish speaking blacks that belong to our culture. They're part of us. So because they have our culture and they have our language, we don't have a distinction between, oh, this is a black Cuban or a black Venezuelan, or we don't have that. We know them as their nationality, and that's just the way it is. It's just that way. And this woman, I'm assuming that she's a dark-skinned Latin. So she could be Cuban or from Dominican Republic, from Puerto Rico, from, you know, Nicaragua, from anywhere. But there are many areas where the ships used to come and bring thousands of slaves and drop them off in the islands before they brought them on to the United States. And for years, many of them escaped into the inner parts of the islands, and they weren't captured again, and they were able to start living there and building their civilizations there. And
see,
that's part
Ruthie,
of American history.
Ruthie,
Americans don't deal with the fact that we had racism here or slaves.
Ruthie, you're getting off, and because 3/4 of the slaves that were brought to the Western Hemisphere went to Brazil. They went to the islands, and they went to Brazil. Only 1/4 of the slaves went to the United States. Okay.
Yeah.
With that being said, Eric, chime in. She's getting into some historical analysis that's very accurate. Okay? And if you ain't up on your history, you can't really talk about it. It's real. Because what she just said, that's real talk. Most of your slaves went to Brazil. They went to the Caribbean islands. That was the transport area, the Caribbean islands.
And by the way, one of the ship masters, his name was Bluefields, and you will find all throughout the Caribbean and through Latin America, in many ports, you will find small villages that are named Bluefields, and you'll find that the majority of the people that live in those villages are black.
Jamaica and all of that.
Go ahead, Eric, you were going to say something?
I'm familiar with that. You know, I didn't know it was only one quarter went to the United States, and other three-fourths went to Brazil and the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway,
yep.
So
that's
Juror B29. She's black. She has dark skin, and they're not sure. You know, the prosecutor wasn't sure. He described her as black or Hispanic during jury selection. He wasn't sure which she was. And in Latin culture, we have men. You know, we have thousands of black Latins their dominance language is Spanish, in fact. And they learn English as a second language, so they have that beautiful accent. B76,
okay.
She's a white woman who's lived in Central Florida for 18 years. And she manages rental properties with her husband for more than 30 years now. She's got two adult children, one of whom is an attorney. And she's involved with animal rescue in all her free time. That's what she does, animal rescue. And during the jury selection, she said that she had been the victim of a nonviolent crime, and she said everybody deserves a fair trial. And B37 is a white woman who volunteers again rescuing animals. And by the way, there were three women that were candidates as jurors, and they were all into animal rescue, and they don't even know each other. It was very, very unusual. Now, this woman that rescues animals, she's married to an attorney. And she has two children. She said that she and her husband used to have concealed weapons permits, both of them. And during the last round of questioning, she said that she had an issue with the type of weapons people are allowed to carry. She also thought that weapons training was inadequate for people seeking permits. She said it should be harder to obtain a gun. That was her position. And then there's E6. E6 is a white woman who's married and has two kids. She's worked in financial services, and she's lived in Seminole County for 2 years. She's very active in her church, and she's involved in her children's school. During jury selection, she said she didn't know the facts of the case well. And then there's E40. She's a white woman who works as a safety officer, and she recently moved to Seminole County from Iowa. She describes herself as a football fan. And during the jury selections, she said that she had been the victim. She was a victim of a nonviolent crime. So that's the background on all six jurors.
That's very interesting.
Wow. Man, she just put it down.
I don't know what that expression means. I just put it down. What does that mean?
That means that you did your homework. That means that you understood what was going on. That means that you came with the facts, and that means that you delivered it unadulterated, and you just left it for people to figure it out. That's
putting
it down.
But in order to respect our audience, the more information we give them, the better it is. And one of the most unusual things that happened this week was that before the jury selection, the Trayvon Martin's parents, Sabrina Fulton and Tracy Martin, they gave an impromptu, it wasn't scheduled, they gave an impromptu press conference. And it was like a matter of minutes, the Martin family, they're going to be in room B1, they're going to give a press conference. So, we're running over there, and they give their press conference, but it's very, very dignified, very collect, you know, Trayvon's mother, under these circumstances, holding her heart together. You know how hard it is when you've lost a child. Well, you don't, but when you've lost a child and just trying to hold it together. And she's very dignified, and they give their press conference, and they leave the room. And about an hour later, George's brother, Robert Zimmerman, announces that he's going to give a press conference. And that one is absolutely impromptu. No one's ready for it, and we're asking questions naturally. And he and I had spoken. Now this is a Monday, June 10th, and he and I had spoken on Sunday, June 9th. Now, why am I so clear on the dates? Because if I'm going to interview someone, I've written them an email. We've exchanged the fact that we're going to do this. I've put it in my Google Calendar. I have it tell my phone to call me and remind me in case, you know, sometimes you lay down and you say, I'm just going to lay here for a few minutes, and you fall asleep. You know, that happens. So I have the phone call me when I have an appointment so that I don't miss it. And I've done all that stuff, and I said, this was my question. And you'll find that if you Google reporter asks Robert Zimmerman about racist tweets, that reporter was me. Robert, I asked you yesterday, and I'm asking you again. I asked you yesterday, and you agreed, you know, that I felt that your Twitter, they call them tweets, the messages, the Twitter messages, and I kept calling them Twitters, not tweets, that your Twitters have been racist in nature. And he said, oh, I didn't have that discussion, and I didn't agree to that.
I asked you yesterday, and I'm asking again, do you find that during the trial when you let out your own Twitters that are, as we discussed and agreed, racist in nature, aren't you fueling the fire?
Well, I did not discuss nor agree to that.
Yeah? Really? That's ridiculous, because I found in my notes that he most certainly had agreed with that, and I have the email that I sent him that he answered back. And by the way, whomever that phone is with the 2486 last four numbers, welcome to Syndicated News. We're very, very happy that you're joining us.
Good evening.
Do you want to just sit and listen, or do you want to come in and talk with us?
I'll mute myself, but I'll definitely listen to what you're saying, and I'll comment in.
What he's saying is he's muting himself so that he can hear us, but we don't have to hear noise in case there's stuff going on in his house, like somebody was dragging a chair,
somebody else had to be crying.
That way they can hear us, and then if they want to join in, they're able to. So
All right.
He said that, and I said, and then my second question. Now I have another question. This is my second question. I said to him,
Robert, as intelligent as you are and eloquent and as well-educated as your family is, your father being a magistrate judge, what possessed Shelley and your brother to go ahead and tell a judge, we have no money, we have nothing? What possessed you when you knew you had fun?
First of all, I disagree with that they somehow collaboratively told that to the judge. Second of all, because Shelley's facing charges, I don't comment on that right now.
Is there someone here from Brooklyn?
I'm in the Bronx.
At Columbia University on 119th Street.
In Harlem.
I taught, yes, that's correct. I taught software applications to get training so that I could get them employed.
Well, thanks for your contribution. I just wanted to say, I haven't been following the case much. I just, you know, just opinionative. It's a sad situation. I don't know what's going to be the outcome, but I just know that this is going on all over America, you know, and I think that our people need to really be, you know, with the guns, and I mean, it's out of control. And then, you know, here we got so-called law-abiding citizens, supposedly, you know, with their license, or, you know, they carry weapons and don't know how to, you know, when to use them and when not to use them. And, you know, it's unfortunate that this young man, you know, had lost his life as a result of a big mistake. You know, whatever the case may be, again, you know, somebody lost their life. You know, you can't bring the kid back, or you can't bring the youth back. And I think that, you know, people need to educate themselves a little bit more. And, you know, people that have weapons, you know, need to learn how to control themselves. You know, because when people have weapons, sometimes, you know, they get a little out of control, whether you're, you know, a law-abiding citizen or not, you know. Guns sometimes are not the answer. You know what a gun is for. A gun is just it's for destruction. It's not healing anything. It's definitely for damage. So, I mean, that's my opinion on that. And again, you know, I haven't caught the whole the trial and what's going on. I know I've just been watching it here and there, increments, and it's just a sad situation overall. You know,
I invite everyone to watch the trial on syndicatednews.net, where we have a live stream every single day.
Let me ask the brother a question. Is he still on the phone? So what do we have to do different in relationship to this trial that's showing us, man, we got to do something different? How do we correct that? And I'm done.
Wow, that's real hard. I mean, as far as for the community, for the youth just got to understand to study their law. That's number one. I think it's educating themselves, you know, in the midst of all these things that's going on. It's educating themselves, knowing how to deal with certain situations. I mean, you know, yeah, we got, you know, the rap, hip-hop type stuff, but, you know, there's a fine line. You got to understand what's entertainment, what's not entertainment, and that's a whole different aspect. But in regards to this, is, you know, you got to, I don't know how to say it. It's like, you know, because now you have situations where you do everything right and always, and there might be a wrong result anyway. So you just try to, you know, it's a fine line that you walk in, you know, and you could be an innocent victim, you know, like this brother. You know, again, I don't know exactly what happened, but, it, you know, for what it's looking like, you know, he was killed. You know, he was an innocent person killed. And again, we don't know what went on. You got to know what, from what I'm thinking. I mean, you know, you can't really judge unless you know what happened. You know, and certain people could look mean and ghetto looking, and they the greatest people in the world. So you can't really stereotype a person. If we get into that, then you know we're going in the same direction as the so-called enemy that's basically bringing us all down. But again, like I said, you have to, you know, it's a fine line you have to walk in. Again, you know, I mean, if you're a street person, you know what's there to come. Now, for the innocent person, you know, what do you tell them when they're just trying to do, they find themselves in a situation where, you know, that they're not expecting to. You know, they haven't done nothing wrong, and whatever, something comes out, whether it's a confrontation with a police officer or somebody that's gung-ho. So that's the thing. You know, you got to, it's a fine line that you walk in, and also as an opinion, it's only an opinion, and we don't really know what happened. You know, I'm just giving my opinion, you know, and yes, it's a lot of, there's a lot of innocent people getting killed out there. And then you got a lot of bad people out there, too. But you got to, you know, to separate or put the two in the same category, it would be a mistake. And that's what I'm saying.
Hi. The young man brought up a couple of good points that I wanted to just expound on just a little bit. The number one thing that stood out with me is that there are people that have permits and they're licensed to have a gun, and it's like they have more rights than a person who doesn't. And I'm not necessarily saying that a gang person or, you know, someone who obtains a weapon illegally should have,
yeah,
you know, exact same rights, but if they were protecting themselves, they should. And it's like that's one thing that I think is playing a whole role in this. And I had a question. Because
yeah,
I don't have television, so I'm not versed on this at all, only what I hear and what I read in the newspaper. What was the time frame after you shot Mr. Trayvon and the time that the police arrived or the time that he indicated that he shot him? Because not all shots are fatal. And I don't know if he panicked and he waited there for a few minutes and then all of a sudden, you know, realized, hey, I shot someone and I need to get someone out here.
The back entrance.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
Okay.
So the young man might have been able to live, depending on, you know, what the wound was. I don't know exactly where he was shot at.
I actually went and walked that area. I too was interested, and it's what I'm finding is that now a year later, now all the what I call the mainstream media are doing things that I did a year ago. For instance, now they're walking the path from where he said he parked his car to where the shooting took place, and to see if there's enough time to do both. Because remember, people, many people, many homes were calling that there was a fight in the back, and they could hear someone screaming. Many say that the tape is too short to make a determination, but also common sense. One of the people I interviewed this afternoon said to me, this is a grown man. He's the one with the gun. He brought the gun to a kid fight, and he's screaming? It made no sense. Why is he screaming when he's got the gun? And then as this continues and people are calling and the phones are going off and 911 automatically records what you're saying and everything, the ambient sound, everything around you in the background. Therefore, what happens is it's recording not just you, but everything that's audible around you is going into that phone and being recorded. And while they were talking, you could still hear that person screaming, and then you hear the shot.
911, do you need police, fire, medical?
Maybe both. I'm not sure. There's just someone screaming outside.
Okay, what's the address that they're near? Okay, and is it a male or female?
It sounds like a male.
Okay, and you don't know why?
I don't know why. I think they're yelling help, but I don't know. Just send someone quick. Say, stop.
Okay. Does he look hurt to you?
I can't see him. I don't want to go out there. I don't know what's going on. So they're sending.
So you think he's yelling help?
Yes.
All right. What is your number?
There's gunshots.
You just heard gunshots?
Yes.
How many?
This one. Jeremy, get down. No, come here.
Is he no longer yelling?
No one, I don't know. Jeremy, get in here now. Jeremy, get up here.
All right, is he right outside?
Yeah, pretty much out the back, yeah.
Is he in front of it or behind that address?
He's behind my house.
Okay.
Just stay away from the windows.
I don't hear him yelling anymore. Do you hear anything?
No, I don't, because I'm hiding upstairs. There was a gunshot right outside our house. I mean, you've obviously sent someone already, right?
Yes, it's in dispatch. What's your name and phone number?
My name is... My phone number is...
How do you spell your last name? Okay. All right, do you hear any vehicles leaving or anyone else? Do you hear anything right
There's
now?
People yelling out there, but I don't want to go down there, so...
Okay, multiple people are yelling now?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, we do have officers on the way. Just call us back if you do hear or see anything else suspicious, like any vehicles leaving or anything like that, okay?
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
And that's the type of thing they're going to have to determine, because naturally... Go ahead.
I apologize for interrupting you, but...
No. I'm so glad you came. By the way, what's your name or where's your location?
I'm in California, and my name is Rita.
Thank you, Rita. Thank you for joining us. Please proceed.
I'm just wondering what the time frame is from when he originally called and the police apparently told him, you know, discontinue following the gentleman, and then him still following and the gunshot going off.
They told him to stand down.
Well, I'll tell you what I did. I'll tell you another aspect that got a lot of people fired. When this case happened, I never called him by his name, and I'll tell you why. Because when I dealt with young people in the legal system, whether it was as a supervised visitation person or taking a child to my home because they're having difficulty in their home, and the judge would assign the mother and the child to my home. In all times, when you're dealing with someone under the age of 21, that person is referred to by law as a child. So when this happened, from the date, from February 26th, from the day that it happened on forward, I never referred to him as the young boy or the kid or the teenager. I always referred to him as the child. In fact, that's why my original folder on this case is still marked child. I never marked it Trayvon Martin. I left it as child because it was a kid. And I remember I did the show by myself and no one wanted to participate and no one wanted to speak on the show. I'm so happy that you're all here and we're all participant and conversational. And I remember that no one wanted to talk, and I thought, I'm here all by myself. I'm a lone voice, you know, in the woods, and I don't even know why I bothered doing this show. Nobody wants to hear it. And no one called in. No one. I mean, no one called in. This was early February 27th at about, you know, 2 or 3 in the morning. And then I closed the show and I played some music and I actually played the phone calls. I started playing whatever had been released. I started playing them, but I didn't edit them. I played them as is. I didn't change them in any way. And I didn't think that was important. I even wrote on YouTube, I'm not going to lean you left or right. I'm giving you the entire tape. There are some gaps because the authorities will remove a person's personal name or the address. So there are some gaps in this tape, and I'm not going to shorten it. I don't want to edit this in any way. I want you to hear it in its entirety exactly as it happened. And that's how I released all of the audio clips that I was given by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, as was any other news group. But many other news groups, to be more exciting, when they had, you know how like in California, because there is such a large Asian population, when you call 911, they ask you, is he Asian, Hispanic, or black? Because that's normal. That's the general population, but not in Florida. In Florida, they ask you, is he black, Hispanic, or white? They asked that like they would ask in any other case. And naturally, George Zimmerman said, he's black. But what a lot of the media did was they removed the 911 dispatcher question. So it made it sound like he was saying, just for the hell of it, yeah, he's black, that type of thing. And many of them were fired for doing that because that was really inappropriate. They were trying to make the call more salacious and more exciting, so they started editing the tapes. And I'm proud to say that at Syndicated News, we never edited anything. We put the tapes out as they were. And if you want to hear them in their original sense, and some of them are raw, I'm letting you know there is some language that's raw on there, but because it is a legal matter, I did not edit them. I did not clean them up. I post them as is. If you go to YouTube and you type Syndicated News, our channel will come up. Also, if you want to watch the show live, we have a live stream on syndicatednews.net, and we also have posted there every single document that's been released on this case. So we have thousands and thousands of documents there, and we're adding more all the time. But I noticed that statement, the time that he's walking and the time the gun went off, there's an amount of time there, and that gap is extensive. At the moment, it seems like it's nothing, but when you sit back and you start counting the seconds, you realize that a lot of time went by, and I think he yelled, "Help me," about 40 times. That's a lot of screaming.
And between the time that the gunshot went off and the apparently the 911 heard the gunshot also, when
yes.
they dispersed someone to go out, what was the time frame? I mean, why when the neighbors or the community was calling them?
Because when they first called, they weren't calling for a gunshot. They were calling because there were two men fighting in the backyard. And they were physically fighting. And in Florida, you know how in New York City and in I guess California, well, maybe California they don't, but you have basements and you have a lower floor and all that. In Florida, you can't have that. You can't have basements. So when two people are fighting, when they fall on the ground has a lot of water in it, so the thud is really different. It's really apparent when somebody falls. In fact, if two animals are fighting, like if a fox or if they're fighting for food, as animals will do, when they start flipping each other's bodies over on the ground, you can hear that big thud. You can hear it. You can sense it. When I'm in the house and there are animals fighting at night, you can hear when they're thudding each other on the ground. You can sense it. Even though you're not outside, you can sense it. And in the same sense, they could tell that these two men were, their bodies had now hit the ground. They could hear that big flop. And it was raining, so when they fell on the grass, you hear all the squish of the water. The two of them fell. And when that happened, that's when the neighbors started calling 911. There were many calls on at the same time with 911. And through many calls, you could hear someone screaming, "Help me, help me, help me." You could hear it. And some of the neighbors would call and say, "There's someone screaming, help me, help me. I don't want to go out there. I'm afraid." And while they're on the phone with the dispatcher, then you can hear the gunshot. And I actually played those tapes on my syndicated news channel on YouTube. You can actually hear it in its entirety. Again, I did not edit the tapes. I posted them exactly as they were released. And I say, I don't want to influence anyone left or right. I want them to be able to speak freely and make a decision.
So my question is, I live in California, and
yes,
police officers respond very quickly. So why, in a prominently Caucasian area, would the police not respond as soon as that person called and said, "Hey, I'm following someone"? Why didn't a police officer come out immediately? That could have...
they were already there, they were already on the grounds and walking towards the incident, but people didn't know that, because when you're walking if you have two rows of houses, you know where the backyards meet, so that the backyard,
exactly,
you can look out your back window at the back window of the house, the row of houses on the other side. You've seen that. That's basically
right.
What
so
it is.
So was it an alley?
That's where all the backs of the houses meet, and then there's a walkway, there's nice grass. But I noticed that the lighting was really poor. It was, I would say, 40-watt bulbs. They were 40-watt bulbs. It was so weak. It was so weak that you could barely see anything. And on that night in particular, it was raining. And in Florida, because the air and the water can be cooler than the earth, when it's raining, you see steam coming out of the grass. So between the fog and the steam and the rain and that piss poor lighting, they looked like they were 40-watt bulbs. You couldn't see a thing. In fact, to take photographs of the crime scene, they had to use flash, because there was no way you could take just a natural photograph of the circumstance. You couldn't. It was impossible. All of those photographs. And, by the way, again, if you go to Flickr and you look for syndicated news, you'll see that we have all of the photographs of the crime scene there, except anything that's... Yeah, everything's in there. Everything's in there except the act. You know, there are no autopsy photos. It's just the graphic of the autopsy, but all the autopsy reports and everything is in there.
Well,
but
I definitely appreciate it, because you have requested me a lot more information, and it gives me a clearer view. I've been to Florida, so I know the atmosphere there, so it definitely gives me a different because, like I said, I don't have internet nor do I have television, so it gives me a different perspective of it and a more visual, and I will definitely check out your website and your YouTube and also the news thing. So I appreciate
it. Thank you so much. We so appreciate you. And I wanted to let you know that the reason, when you go to syndicatednews.net, one of the first things you'll see is all that delicious cooking. It's called Cuban with a Twist. That's not me cooking, by the way. That's Jennifer Matanzas. And the reason we so enjoy her, Jennifer Matanzas, is because she's the sister of Armando Christian Perez. Does anybody know who that is?
Please enlighten me.
That's Pitbull. His stage name is Pitbull.
Pitbull.
Yes, Pitbull. And his sister has a rapper. Yeah, and his sister, he's a Cuban rapper, and his sister needed a forum to bring her cooking show, and I said, please, bring it over here. So if you see a lot of Pitbull stuff on syndicated news, the reason is because we kind of cross-promote. It's only natural, you know. This one's a brother of this one, who's a cousin of that one. And our Twitter gal, the gal that runs our Twitter, is the daughter of Madeline Arnaz. And if you're wondering who Madeline Arnaz is, she was the first child, she was the first live birth of Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz.
I love Lucy.
Yeah, they had her adopted through a private family, and then they wanted to, you know, for the Warner Brothers and RCA and RKO and all of the other programs that they were doing to portray them as the couple with the boy and the girl, you know, it's so romantic, but actually they had three children, and they sent one out to be adopted under a private arrangement, and she was there for every step. So if you want to hear about the DNA test and all that stuff, you go to blogtalkradio.com and type Lucille Ball or Desi Arnaz or Cassie Arnaz or Dr. Bettinger, because Dr. Bettinger, when he saw that Cassie Arnaz had written, she had been interviewed about the fact that she wanted to prove who she was, he actually contacted her, and I asked him, thank you for contacting her. And Dr. Bettinger happens to be the foremost authoritative person on DNA, and he's also a trademark lawyer. So what better person to do the show? And I interviewed him. I interviewed the detective on the case, which was Vito Colucci, and I interviewed Mr. Yates, the president of a DNA company. Because I said to him, I'm not going to do it, you know, Maury Povich style with people screaming, he is the father. We're not going to do it that way. We're going to do it in an elegant format, and that's how we did it. And a lot of people were upset. But you've got to understand that Clint Eastwood didn't accept or recognize six of his kids, and instead of dealing with them and paying child support, he went to Italy and he did spaghetti westerns for 20 years. And people think, wow, he's so formidable. He went to Italy and he did all those wonderful movies. No, he was avoiding child support. And then we've got Jerry Lewis, who's had Jerry's kids for, what, 40 years? But he will not recognize his own daughter. But his son went, well, he came here to Florida, found the girl, had the DNA test done, and he proved that, yes, she is Jerry Lewis's daughter. And you know who called him out on it? Howard Stern. He said, listen, you hypocrite, you're doing all this Jerry's kids, but you can't recognize your own daughter? And Jerry Lewis, millionaire that he is, his daughter was living under bridges here in Florida. She didn't have money to pay bills. She didn't have money to put a roof over her head. And he's a multimillionaire, and you know, to this day, he has not recognized her, even though the DNA has proved it. And some families will do stuff like that.
Damn.
So what we did was, once we did the DNA with Cassandra, then we did the show. It was great. And then we said, you know, now you have your DNA. What are you going to do with it? So we hired her. She's our Twitter gal. She does all our Twitter, our Facebook, and all that stuff. So
you
that's
got some
about it. Oh, wait, it gets better. You like military history? Richard Lowry, the military historian, Richard Lowry, writes our history pieces. And then the Guardian's Ian Williams, who is stationed in the United Nations in New York City, he has also joined us. And a very important person from CBS has joined us. And we have one of the heaviest, toughest family courts in the nation is Cook County Family Court in Chicago, Illinois. And a family court judge, she's very beautiful. Her name is Judge Michelle Lawrence. She has joined us. She's been with us almost 6 years now. And her son is Justin Lawrence. He's the one that puts together those nightclubs with Eva Longoria. So we have a lot of people with different interests. And who else do we have here? Oh, our CEO, because we needed music, and music is the most expensive thing to get in a company. I brought in John McEwen. He's one of the founders of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, and he's got oodles and oodles of music that he's written for movies and radio shows and I guess soap operas and commercials and things like that. So we have beautiful banjo and guitar and oboe and piano, just gorgeous pieces that we use to adorn our shows. And who else is with us? Ah, the Stewarts. The Stewarts interview people Saturday mornings on Lincoln Road in South Beach, Miami. And who else do we have? Yeah, they do. They do a whole video show. They're called The Purple Pages. If you go to syndicatednews.net and you look under entertainment, there are the Stewarts. Their show is called Alive on South Beach. And they've got, they just interviewed John Leguizamo was on before that. It was Arsenio Hall. All sorts of fun people. Really, really interesting show. In fact, I went and met, I've been working with them for over 2 years. They've become some of my closest friends. And I finally went to meet them in person a couple of months ago. It was a riot. And John McEwen, by the way, left his McMansion in California, moved to New York City for a year and a half, and now he's here in Sarasota, Florida. He's performing around the Florida area and down south, and he's enjoying it because the poor man was suffering from cold and snow. But he's still traveling all over the country. And what else? Who else is here? Anyway, if you go to syndicated...
And your name, what's your name, young lady?
Ruthie DiTucci.
All right. Great. It's my first time listening in.
Thank you. You're welcome here. We play music of all types. We also introduce new musicians, and we play all sorts of Latin music, rap music, classical music. I interview historians, dancers, writers, and all sorts of people. And, we have a visitor. Let's see now. He's coming in. Let's see. We just sent the question. In any case, we have lots of people from different parts of the world. And, I see our host is just coming back from the kitchen. He was making a cup of coffee. Isn't that right? And here he is. Patrick, have you had your cup of coffee now? Are you back now?
Yes, I have.
Okay, great. I hear that coffee cup. That's great. And let me see. If you go to syndicatednews.net on the right, first of all, you're going to find high-fidelity music. We've got music from every part of the world. And we have a translating system that has over 200 languages. So if you click any language you want, you can every page in the website will change to that language. So you can actually read anything you want in any language. And we are followed by 72 countries. And I'm proud to say that the woman that founded this company, syndicatednews.net, is a Hispanic woman.
Nice. Latina.
Yes, Latina. And she also founded syndicatednews.com, which is in Hong Kong. And she still owns 30% of it.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Yeah, that's me. That's me. I'm the Latina.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I
Sigue
got it.
Palante, palante.
Yeah, like Pitbull says, to go backwards, you don't go backwards for any reason, not even to gain impulse to go forwards. You don't go backwards ever, always forward. And wonderful, wonderful words. I love his lyrics. If you listen to the struggles that he went through and the suffering that he experienced and the beautiful music and the industry he's made today, it is shocking and alarming.
He deserves everything. I mean, I've followed his music since he first started from the underground. So, you know.
Yeah,
exactly. He's been.
And by the way, I can't thank you all enough for joining us. And I wanted to let you know that our show has 90 seconds left, so we've got to say goodnight. And I got to tell you that maybe we should do this again on get together on Friday nights or Saturday nights and talk. Because I'm covering the trial, I'm in the courtroom every day, and I can bring you the real material. So anyway, we'll get together next week. This is Ruthie at syndicatednews.net.